and I said hello to him, and right after he got to where I was, this policeman walked up, and the policeman started to give him a hard time, and...
What do you mean by that, giving a hard time?
Well, they had been having words, apparently, next door, and Chris had offered to have a fight with him in a fair fight, but not...
possibly a boxing match with the proceeds to be split between the Police Officers Association and the Homeless Coalition?
Something like that. Mm-hmm. The officer, when that offer was made, he said, well, that's it, he said, turn around, and he put the cuffs on him. And Chris didn't resist arrest, and he told me that he never threw any coffee or even, he was accused of offering, threatening to throw coffee on the police.
Now, was Chris carrying coffee at this point? Did he have a cup
of coffee? No, he did not have a cup of coffee. But he was told that, he told me that he never threatened to throw coffee on.
Was Chris in a,
He had tea, actually he had tea, I think, in a cup.
Tea in a cup, huh?
And I believe so, I'm not positive. And apparently the officer took the cup and threw it away with his tea in it. So I don't know what...
Discussing of vital evidence.
Well, I don't know what happened there. So anyhow, Chris denied that he ever threatened to throw any...
So Chris was hauled off for trying to engage in a fundraising activity with the assistance of the police, eh?
I don't know. I wasn't over. I wasn't in the candy shop. But you know... I asked the policeman, I said, hey, what are the charges? And he said, I'll talk to you later, which he never did, of course.
Mm-hmm.
He just wanted to hustle Chris off to jail, and...
Well, he now sits, right? What's the update? I think he had a court date today, or...
He had a court date today, but I haven't talked to him, so I don't know how it turned out. Apparently, he wasn't released because he would have called me and said to pick him up and at the jail, and so I presume he's still there.
Well, if you don't know the name of the police officer who did the arrest, do you?
Oh, boy.
Chris said it was either Officer Lamaze or Officer...
Lamaze. I think Lamaze sounds like... Lamaze sounds like... is he a young guy, about 30...
Lamaze is a young guy, but there are other young officers on the force, so that sounds...
I think it was Lamaze.
Good, but he mentioned Lamaze and then another officer. We actually had a long interview with him from jail, but... I unfortunately disconnected before the interview was over, so he didn't get the whole thing. If he calls you again, tell him to try a second collect call here, and we'll try to conclude the interview. Plus, tell him I'm interested in seeing a written version of what's happened if he wants to write it down.
Okay.
And tell him good luck, and anything you want to say for our Free Radio Santa Cruz audience.
Okay.
Okay. And that was Dr. Joe Brozda, public citizen, father of Chris Brozda, and apparently a witness to part of the incident which ultimately resulted in Chris Brozda's being given free lodging at the county jail, which I suppose in this case he would have preferred to do without, and still does. Let's turn now to another aspect of that trip. I promised you an interview with Prescott, Arizona, and I'm going to do that, but... I have an equally interesting interview with folks in San Diego, California. Assuming I haven't mislaid the tape. No, I've got it right here. San Diego, California really is quite inspirational, the homeless folks there. They are operating with a group that now calls itself the People's Establishment. More than 150 homeless people have now planted themselves in front of City Hall and the downtown concourse in San Diego and have been there for 3.5 months. An amazing record. Every night, more than 150 people sleep in an open area which is self-managed. The city is too cheap to provide shelter, too repressive to allow people to sleep with any safety in other areas. They fear harassment by police, and also there are laws against sleeping in vehicles. So they've come to the San Diego concourse. We've talked about this in past shows. San Diego, however, heard about Santa Cruz's Don't Sleep Tonight night, the night on June 29th when folks were asked not to sleep between 11 and 8:30 in solidarity with homeless people who are barred from sleeping or covering up with blankets during that period. So we had this interview with Roger Scott of the People's Establishment, who began, he discussed what San Diego was doing in that regard.
June 30th, 1998, about 10 to 11, and we're on the line with San Diego homeless activist Roger Scott. Hi, Roger.
Yes, sir.
And Roger, you're of course in the midst of the largest demonstration, the largest ongoing homeless demonstration that I've ever heard of. Even the tent city in L.A. in the mid-80s didn't last as long as you, I think, although I'm not entirely sure about that. You had about 150 to 200 people at the San Diego City Concourse, which is the public buildings and the downtown sort of new ritzy, glitzy shopping center, camping there every night for the last 3 months, right?
Yes, sir, we have.
And I guess you had a special night last night in honor of Santa Cruz's Don't Sleep Tonight night, right?
Yes. What we did was about 3 days ago, we made a bunch of signs up, and they have a place out here called Horton Plaza, which is one of the most tourist attractions when they come to San Diego. We had took about 10 people, made up signs, we walked all the way through the whole downtown area with signs stating about the sleepless night in honor of our twin sister Santa Cruz to overturn the sleeping ban. We passed out flyers that we made up a thousand of them explaining the situation. Last night, down at the concourse, we normally have 150 people. Last night we had 270 people. We supplied coffee and sodas and food for everybody to, you know, to have something. And everybody was in honor of doing this to support Santa Cruz and what they're trying to accomplish there.
Wow, that's quite a memorial there, Roger.
And we wanted to let the people up there know that we are thinking about them, and if there's anything that we can do down here in San Diego to help them, that we would. And I personally want to tell them that regardless of their situation on the sleeping ban, that not to give up, to always look for the positive things that you could do for something like that.
Now, do you have a sleeping ban in San Diego as well? Is there an ordinance which prohibits homeless people from sleeping in vehicles or on the San Diego streets?
No, there's no ordinance here for sleeping, that we are allowed to sleep almost anywhere that we choose to within reason.
Now, so is that in fact the real practice of the police, or do they find some harassment ordinances to drive sleeping homeless San Diego people out of town?
Sometimes they do a lot of harassment, but they don't really do as much as they did. As of now, they're kind of calm about it. If you're in a pretty well area that they know about, such as the city, they don't bother you whatsoever about sleeping. Once in a while, they will at the park, but not too often.
Uh-huh. So you actually had a significant increase. That's, you might call it huge, from 175 to 270 is a big increase. Rise in the number of people at your nightly self-managed camping spot in front of the City Hall complex. Do you think these folks are going to stay? I mean, we're talking about, these were mostly more homeless people from the streets who I saw all over San Diego when I was down there. There were homeless, three or four homeless people at least on every block that I passed. It was amazing.
Yes, we're probably not staying there until something is done. The police have more or less asked people to come down to the city, as if we would all be in one area. They're being kind of lenient. Once in a while, they will harass us.
Well, you yourself were arrested twice, right?
Three times.
Three times, and you were arrested for essentially expanding the protest to the anti-homeless U.S. Grant Hotel. You were, they claimed you were drunk when you were not, by your account. And I guess the other two times you were arrested for what? Or going on the grounds of the Naval Training Center and your attempt to reclaim that property for homeless use?
Yes, that and illegal lodging.
And illegal lodging, when was that last illegal lodging arrest?
That was on June 10th.
And what were the circumstances behind that?
Well, I was out front of our newspaper and I was protesting and they told me I needed to go back down to the city to protest, and I said I have every right to protest right here.
The city, you mean the city center where most, where everybody sleeps at night, right?
Yes.
They didn't like the idea of your holding up a sign 6 blocks away. They thought they wanted to limit the First Amendment to a small area around City Hall.
Exactly. They wanted to try to confine us to one area. Well, a person has every right to protest, and protesting of all different forms, any place that they want, and that is a public forum. I was on a public forum, but they didn't see it that way. They tried to consider me as the ringleader, and I'm not. Everybody now at the city is a leader.
At the city concourse?
Yes, at the city concourse. Everybody is their own spokesman, their own leaders, their own security. Everybody is responsible for themselves. And we've been getting along really good that way by not having one leader. What I'm considered as their spokesman for them.
Well, so you had a larger turnout, you had this great march, and you said some people stayed awake throughout the night in honor of the homeless in Santa Cruz who have to stay awake because of the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban, which makes sleeping or covering up with blankets between 11 and 8:30 in the morning completely illegal.
Yes, this morning when we disbanded, I had to come up here to the office, there was probably 120 people that were still awake, and they had planned on going to the park or staying right there and sleeping for the day. And I was on my way back down there now, but I just haven't quite made it out the door yet.
So, is there much, in such a large group of people in such a small area, particularly among the homeless population, I was talking yesterday to a street news editor in New York City, a man named Indio Washington, who's an editor of the homeless newspaper there, and we were talking about how nowadays conservative think tanks like to stigmatize homeless people as being either drunks, crazies, or druggies. Now, was there a lot of drinking, drug use, and wild abusive behavior at the self-managed camp out last night?
No, last night there was a lot of coffee, there was a lot of soda, there was a lot of food. Delta Airlines had come over and brought over all kinds of sandwiches. The lady, her name is, I think it's Charles, she's the main lady in the movie Grease, had a performance there for 3 days, and she left like 75 pizzas ordered for the people there last night.
I'm going to take the next plane down. Sounds better than Santa Cruz. It's legal to sleep. You got the people whipping out pizzas and sodas. I mean, what's next?
I don't know, but I know that the public was really aware of what we were doing last night. I seen a lot of people come by, say hi, how you doing, bringing us food by, and you know, it was a really good thing that happened, and they were pleased with us for trying to honor another part of our state in protest with them.
We know that all of you are going to call the Santa Cruz City Council at 408-429-3550 and tell them that it's time to change that sleeping ban law, and tell them what the number of people in San Diego who stayed awake in order to maintain solidarity with the homeless here in Santa Cruz.
Okay, and what was that number again?
The number for you, Roger Scott of San Diego, and also for any of you out there in the Free Radio Santa Cruz audience who may have either stayed awake or simply feel this issue is very important, the Santa Cruz City Council 24-hour message line is 429-3550. 429-3550. And for those not in the area code, that's area code 408.
Okay, Robert, we will sure call them and let them know.
Now, one last question, Roger. There have been some threats from the police and the mayor's office, the mayor, Susan Golding. This is a very large city, over 1 million people down there?
I think it's 2 million or something.
Big city, San Diego, might even be bigger than, I think it's bigger than any cities we have in Northern California, which are larger than San Jose, 800,000. You, when you attempt and others attempt to speak to the city council on this issue, in spite of its obvious pressing nature, because I mean, there are 200 people a night, 200 people a night in front of city council, the city council buildings, the mayor, Mayor Susan Golding, refuses, is that her name, Susan Golding?
Yes.
Refuses to actually hear you. Often I think one or two people get to speak for a very brief period of time. What is it? What's the oral communications time? How long do you get to talk for?
She usually I just talked for 3 minutes, which isn't very much.
So, and in essence, there is no real dialogue going on in the city other than a series of threats, as I understand it, from the police who were threatening to run you off by June 19th and then backed off on that threat. And you told me recently that, I think it was yesterday, that the Mayor Golding had been kind of shopping around for a judge to close down your self-managed encampment with an injunction. And what happened with that attempt?
Well, what happened was, Sunday night, last night, somebody had told me that she had made a statement saying that by Sunday night at midnight, that she would have that whole city hall down there, the protest closed down. Then the next thing I heard was she could not find a judge here in San Diego to sign that court order to have us removed. And I believe myself that there was no judge here that would sign it because she would be violating her own self against the constitutional right of the people here that are protesting. And so as of right now, the latest word is I had made a statement to him that we were not leaving. We had a constitutional right to be there, and we were going to stay no matter how long it took.
Now, isn't Tuesday City Council Day down in San Diego or not?
Yes, every Tuesday at 10 o'clock.
You're going to be, I guess, 10 o'clock, that was an hour ago.
I was so tired, Robert, I had to lay down and sleep because I'd been up all night.
Well, I suppose we'll forgive you on this one occasion, Roger.
This is the first one that I've missed in 4 months, and I feel kind of bad about it, but, you know, sometimes you got to lay down.
Well, you can console yourself that they didn't miss you.
Yeah.
Well, Roger, I want to thank you. Is there anything more you want to add for the Santa Cruz Free Radio audience?
Yes, I'd like to tell everybody there in Santa Cruz that if I can have my, if I get a chance, that I'm going to come up that way and visit you all. But right now, I have a lot of things here that I have to do before I can get up there. I don't know how long it'll be, but I would like to go up there and help y'all with your thing that's going on.
You're always welcome up here, Roger.
Okay.
There's not much organized homeless. There's no organized homeless protest going on. There's mostly just sympathizers who have houses or have rooms they're renting, and they are, you know, speaking out on these issues. Have you heard anything from Santa Monica, where there was a protest, I guess, a month or so ago that you guys visited, and we haven't heard anything from them?
No, I haven't heard. Last I heard was that David was out in the street or something. He didn't know where Jennifer was.
Right, David Bush and Jennifer Wagoner, of course, are two activists in Santa Monica who were arrested back in November after successfully opening up the Flamingo Motel for homeless use and renovating it. It had been an abandoned building used by the RAND Corporation, and they were able to keep homeless people there for a week or so until the city moved in and demanded they leave, even though there was no place for these homeless people to go. And now, recently, they started a protest a couple months ago at front of City Hall, actually inspired by your protest, Roger, to demand that the city guarantee Section 8 housing and end its sleeping van policies. And I believe that they suffered severe police repression because when we went through Santa Monica, they weren't there and we couldn't find much pressure. So if you hear from them, let us know. And
I sure will.
Anything else happening you want to talk about, or is that...
No, other than that, we're down at the city concourse, and we're going to be there, and we're going to keep plugging away at this thing.
Well, Seattle has started its tent city again, I'm told, in the jungle. Tent City 2, they call it. Oh. So they are fighting back after the city demolished their tent city in the jungle. First, they set it up in front of City Hall, then they moved it to the jungle, and that whole action is continuing. So maybe you can establish some links with them as well.
I wish them all the luck in the world, too. I wish everybody in the world luck on everything that they're doing. And I personally support everybody that's for the homeless and trying to do something.
Okay, I want to tell you that there is a crackdown on the homeless on Telegraph Avenue, which is being strongly resisted by supporters, homeless and non-homeless alike. They are marching to a public hearing, a rather unique public hearing, the first of its kind. It's being held tomorrow in Berkeley against this kind of police harassment, where police are spraying down the sidewalks and moving in mental health teams to threaten people, and moving in animal control teams to threaten to take their dogs. And this is all being publicly exposed by activists who are going to city council tomorrow night, actually not city council, to the police review board tomorrow night to bring this issue to public notice. So there's lots happening all over the place, and I just wanted to let you know about that.
Okay, I appreciate that.
I should let you go back to bed. Sounds like you're a little tired there.
Yeah, I still am, but I wanted to call you to let you know how it went last night, and I think Larry Miller is going to be calling you too.
Oh, good. Larry is a longtime activist with Urban Safari, and you're calling from the headquarters of Street Life, the homeless newspaper down there, which has been covering these issues in some detail. For any Santa Cruzans who are looking for an issue of Street Life, you can call HUF headquarters, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. We'll try to get you a copy. We'll encourage you to donate $1 to a homeless person, but if you need it, we'll get it to you. Plus, of course, Street Spirit, the newspaper that's also covered the San Diego and situation all throughout California for homeless people. Anyway, we've been talking to Roger Scott. Thank you, Roger, for letting us know. You're with, of course, the group called the Public Establishment, is that right?
No, the People's Establishment.
Sorry, the People's Establishment. The homeless group that is now has the longest standing protest in California this year that's been going on, and the largest, I might add, and I hope that you can continue and spread that sentiment to other cities where it is also illegal for homeless people to be in public spaces. Talk to you later then, Roger.
Okay.
Yeah, that was an interview with Roger Scott, I guess 2 days ago on June 30th, with the People's Establishment. We then, actually, as I mentioned in the interview, went up to Berkeley. And last night, we're at the Berkeley Police Review Commission, which had a special hearing, not quite a public hearing. It was a subcommittee meeting held near Telegraph Avenue in the, I believe, the Methodist Church, where it was held conveniently close to Telegraph Avenue so that homeless people who have been complaining in droves that they are the target of an increased funded police crackdown called Operation Avenue Watch, specifically targeting the 5 blocks along the University of California south side of Telegraph Avenue. So these folks were able to attend this hearing. On the positive side, the hearing was held as scheduled. It was held in record time after the last regular Police Review Commission meeting. In contrast, our own Citizens Police Review Board has never held such a special meeting, and for my money, never will. Police Review Commission in Berkeley, although it's been criticized for inaction and underfunding, was initially the strongest police review commission in the country and really retained that status for many years. It had an independent reviewer, independent investigation, had subcommittees where they held public hearings. Your complaints did not disappear into the bowels of the police department, but rather were reviewed by skeptical individuals appointed by city council people. The problems of the Police Review Commission were many as well. They, in the last decade, according to knowledgeable critics, they have become, through a combination of lack of funding and bad appointments, very quiescent, very much kind of like a fig leaf for the police department, very much saying, we can't do this and we can't do that and so forth. Well, this was quite the exception, as I said. The positive aspect to this was the first hearing ever held near the avenue accessible to homeless people. It was held after a meeting at which the Police Review Commission decided to publicly denounce and demand the end of the Telegraph Avenue sweeps as a policy statement, even before going through this elaborate process of examining each complaint piecemeal. They also agreed to send investigators up to Telegraph Avenue to take complaints, not for great long periods of time. Their investigator, Barbara Attard, will be up there, I guess, on July 8th. But the mere presence there was sufficient, I think, or the threat of their presence and this public outcry was sufficient to have the police visibly pull back their forces. When I was up there a week and a half ago, there were a total of 16 officers in 2 blocks. Was it a riot? Was it murder? Was it rape? No, it was a couple of kids sitting on the sidewalk, another kid with a dog. It was an attempt to intimidate and frighten the youth culture out of the area. That's what this is about. The destruction, not just of the homeless folks, but of youth culture too, generally. Of people that some businesses, not all, and indeed some businesses spoke in favor of the young people and against this police repression, but some businesses like Cody's Books, headed by Andy Ross, and Larry Blake's restaurant, have essentially been pressing to do. It's all kind of part of a larger political picture in Berkeley, which has a sort of a parallel course with Santa Cruz. Berkeley in 1994, in the early spring, immediately after Seattle passed sit on the sidewalk, go to jail laws, began considering similar laws against peaceful, non-obstructive sitting and against peaceful spare changing. And there was such an outcry against those laws that they postponed the hearings indefinitely. During that period of time, in the spring of 1994, the Santa Cruz City Council quickly rushed through the infamous downtown ordinances, which make it illegal in Santa Cruz to sit down. Initially, it was anywhere on the sidewalk, and when that was broken with massive demonstrations and court decisions locally that held that unconstitutional, the Kennedy Council, he was then mayor, returned with a second law which made it illegal to sit 10 feet from a shop, 50 feet from an ATM, 4 feet from a telephone or water fountain, and that law is still in effect, plus a series of other laws making any kind of peaceful spare changing after dark a criminal offense. First offense, $162, second offense, up to 6 months in jail and $1,000. I'm not aware that that penalty has ever been exacted, but it is a potent threat against people for essentially exercising basic First Amendment rights of freedom of association and freedom of speech. We're not talking about assault, we're not talking about littering, we're not talking about urinating and defecating, we're not talking about threats to the public health and safety, we're talking about merchant preferences and merchant paranoia. That's what we're talking about here. Anyway, Santa Cruz passed these nasty laws after Berkeley had essentially shouted them down. Right-wing Berkeley people went to initially what they did was they put on the ballot a couple of nasty propositions in the 1994 elections, propositions N and O. O is the sit on the sidewalk, go to jail law for Berkeley, which was actually more moderate than our sit on the sidewalk law and had a very significant social services component. In essence, it was the carrot that went with the stick. They said, we're going to open some more services, but we're going to make sure that none of the people can be in public spaces so they can, so that we don't have to see them around. Let's, ghettoize them off to the side, and they should be able to shut up and be taken care of somewhere else. Although, of course, the services were very limited, but there were some services offered. In response, for the first time in 20 years, Berkeley activists mounted a referendum in opposition to Proposition O. They were able to, within a month, get that on the ballot, a referendum opposing the city council's law, and or the city council's proposition, its advisory Proposition O, and they barely lost, partially because of factional disputes in the summer and fall of 1994 in Berkeley, partially because mayoral candidate, the man who was running against the conservative, what the hell was his name? Jelinek. His name was Jelinek. He came out late in opposing it, and he took the politicians sticking his finger in the wind to see which way the wind was blowing instead of taking an initially principled stand on the issue. There were numerous other reasons. In the districts that the law applied, it was defeated. However, the Hill and the other wealthy areas in the city helped to pass it, and Proposition O was passed. However, shortly after it was passed, a Berkeley judge, the same one who for so many years protected Free Radio Berkeley and then turned against Free Radio Berkeley 2 weeks ago, Claudia Wilkin, put this Proposition O, sit on the sidewalk, go to jail, on hold so that, in fact, people could continue to sit on the sidewalk, and did. Throughout this whole process, of course, police continue to arrest and harass people independently of all this. And that's, of course, what the irony of it all is. Regardless of the law, the police will do their thing and have done their thing, and I'll talk more about that in a moment. But again, the history of this latest harassment effort, Telegraph currently historically has a lot of harassment at certain times of the year, Christmas time, before the summer shopping season, and before students return in the fall. And I think it's also during the spring break that was mentioned by activist Russell Bates, I believe, at the last night's Police Review Commission meeting in Berkeley. In any case, Berkeley has been holding off this anti-homeless law, at least as a law, the sit on the sidewalk, go to jail law, for several years, and eventually a new so-called liberal city council came in, the current city council, with a 5-4, quote, liberal majority, and they threw out most of the law. They kept some sections about no panhandling near an ATM and a couple of other, but nothing about sitting. So the sitting law was thrown out. So about a month ago, the city manager, without any kind of public announcement, without any public process, met privately with various council members and himself appropriated and initiated what's called Operation Avenue Watch, which is $75,000 to beef up police and focus police on telegraph under the pretext of cleaning the streets, enforcing dog ordinances to keep dog feces off the streets, under the pretext of looking for so-called problematic street behavior, people talking to themselves, people shouting and ranting, people acting in ways that many of us find uncomfortable and awkward, let's admit it. And also, simply, they claimed they weren't doing it, but they did in fact do it, going after youth and young people for sitting down on the block of telegraph that is across from Ross's Books, also known as Cody's Books. We hate to use the name Cody's Books because Cody was a friend of the homeless. He actually designed his store so there would be an inset area where homeless people could sit. And it's a kind of very supreme irony that the new owner of the store, Ross, hoses the sidewalks every morning to hose away the homeless and has made it illegal to lean against his building. They even claim that there is a so-called 2-foot area near the building, I believe, that he has access to on the public sidewalk where he can arrest homeless people for trespassing, or young people who sit there for trespassing. So, Operation Avenue Watch came into effect. They had a huge, not a huge, but a substantial cleaning, green cleaning machine, 4 to 6 feet long. They would haul along, hosing down the sidewalk, which is fine, nothing wrong with clean sidewalks, but they would keep going over the same areas of the sidewalk, which just happened to be the areas where young people were sitting, and do it 3 or 4 times a day. And when young people finally refused to move, they would call cops, they would call animal control officers to threaten to take dogs, they would threaten to call CPS for a woman with her baby, they would call mental health. It was a general use of services to go after youth under the pretext of cleaning up the city. And the irony of all this also is that this wasn't initiated by right-wingers. This was done in collusion with liberals. First of all, the liberals on the city council could have stopped it at any time. They have a majority, 5-4. None of them spoke out about it, including Chris Worthington, who is the most liberal of the liberals, the supposed radical on the council, the guy who was elected from the district in which Telegraph Avenue sits, south of the University of California Berkeley campus. When I spoke to him a week ago at a police review commission meeting, he told me that he had to hear from all sides before he did anything. And of course, the obvious question which I asked him when I spoke to him yesterday was, you have the opportunity to call the police department at any time to hear their side of any issue. If an individual calls you and you get a whole bunch of complaints from people talking about a police crackdown, are you going to wait week after week after week until the police happen to call you up? That apparently is what he was doing. And his political strategy was this. He actually was one of the people who supported this Operation Avenue Watch, not because he wanted to see young people hosed away, it must be said, but because he saw coming down the road a new sitting ban law being pushed by Mayor Shirley Dean, the right-wing mayor, and a renegade from the so-called liberal majority, giving the conservatives, a majority of the city council, a majority in this new anti-sitting law, which will, by the way, be coming up for a first reading in Berkeley on Tuesday at the Berkeley City Council. Let's see, today is the second Thursday, third Friday, fourth Saturday, fifth Sunday, sixth Monday. It'll be the 7th, July 7th, and I'm going to be going up to Berkeley, incidentally, for all you folks who are interested in showing solidarity with Berkeley homeless people. And we're going to be going up, probably be leaving around 4 o'clock from the town clock. And if anybody's interested in this, do give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. We're going to be talking more about that. And before we continue, let me interrupt myself to say that we are talking to you from Free Radio Santa Cruz. That's 96.3 FM on your FM dial, Free Radio Santa Cruz. That's the station that continues to broadcast in spite of FCC threats, in spite of FCC injunctions in other cities, in spite of FCC seizures in Philadelphia. And we are in solidarity with Seize This Radio, which is turning the tables on the FCC and suing them in New York City for violating basic First Amendment rights with their threats, injunctions, and economically discriminatory licensing requirements. So if you have anything you want to say on the air, we also have studio lines open. And our number here in the studio is 423-5361. 423-5361. I encourage anyone who has some information they want to give us, who has some thoughts on anything we've been talking about, who wants to join this discussion, to give a call to, again, 423-5361 here on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3 FM. My show, Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, that's the show you're listening to, is on twice a week, Thursday at 6, Sundays at 11. Looks like we got an incoming call.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Hello.
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 Hi, I'm calling with the Sentinel. How are you doing tonight?
Oh, good.
I was just wondering if you get the paper delivered.
Ooh, you know, you're calling Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Oh, I am?
Mm-hmm. Unless you want to give us a free subscription, we can't really help you.
Okay, I'm sorry, then I guess I can't.
Alrighty.
Thanks anyway.
Well, isn't that a hoot? Looks like the Sentinel won't be coming to the Free Radio Santa Cruz door, and that probably is more of a blessing than anything else. Anyway, we were talking about Berkeley and what's happening up there and how we can help them as they fight this new attack on poor people on Telegraph Avenue. The issue of Operation Avenue Watch and why haven't the liberals spoken out against it stems from a complicated, subtle political strategy, which some of them have, at least Chris Worthington has, Councilmember Worthington. His strategy is to support a cleaning program on Telegraph Avenue, where he supports cleaning up the avenue, where that means cleaning the sidewalks, getting rid of the litter, making sure that any genuine violations of the existing laws are dealt with, and in so doing, to kind of buttress his stock with the community and the council by saying, hey, look, we're enforcing existing laws and we're cleaning up the sidewalk. What have you got to complain about? Sounds good. Sounds like a good strategy. The problem is that in initiating this strategy, what he has done is he has supported a massive appropriation of money for the police department, for animal control, for other agencies whose real agenda has nothing whatsoever to do with any of those things and whose real aim is to sabotage the very objectives that Worthington is pressing, namely to head off an anti-sitting law, which apparently was on the back burner or on the front burner, but not yet put under the fire, or not yet actually put in the oven, I should say, to cook, but which will go into the oven on Tuesday at the Berkeley City Council meeting at 7 o'clock on July 7th. Worthington's strategy was to say, we'll just give more money to the police to enforce existing laws, and that'll help. What he has done, of course, is he is now, it has had two disastrous effects. The first is, of course, a wholesale violation of the rights of a lot of young people who've had their dogs taken, who've been harassed, who've had their property taken, who've been hosed. And again, the claim is that some of the water has chemicals as well. Again, not substantiated, but threatened, certainly. And the entire climate of the avenue has been, the tension level has risen markedly. And this, in fact, was one of the reasons that the Police Review Commission became so concerned and issued a statement against this practice, because Telegraph Avenue has had riots in the past. And what, in essence, it looked like the conservatives on the council, with the help of liberal Chris Worthington, were going to do was create another riot. And, of course, once you have a riot, that's a good excuse for an even bigger crackdown. So Worthington's strategy to support this Operation Avenue Watch and say, look, we're enforcing the laws, look, we're going in and cleaning up things, that should help, was wrong for two reasons. The first is because he gave the power to agencies, the police, the city manager, who had no interest in any real conscientious or honest enforcement of that policy. Rather, their objective was to get more anti-homeless laws. Their objective was to support the conservative majority. That's the first problem. The second problem is that kind of stems from that is that not only did this result in the violation of the rights of many, many people and increasing threats to the safety of people up there. When you have people harassing other people, it produces a climate of violence. But it also is bound to fail. It's going to fail one way or the other. Either it'll fail because it'll produce a riot, it'll fail because people will head off a riot by getting rid of the cops, by getting the council to back them off and put and send them to other parts of the city, and so forth. In any case, the conservatives can always claim that policy doesn't work, that what they need are new laws. So the idea of supporting police repression, or supporting more money for the police to enforce existing laws, more money for these agencies to clean up the sidewalks, can't work unless it's very carefully controlled. And Worthington must have known very early, because he was receiving complaints 2 or 3 weeks ago, that this wasn't happening. Yet he said nothing. Anyway, this was a matter of some concern to people at the Berkeley Police Review Commission who are speaking in the audience, although it didn't seem to be a matter of a great concern to the Berkeley Police Review Commission itself. Although the Police Review Commission was in complete solidarity, it seemed, with the audience at the end of the evening, they were going to come to the City Council meeting. They were not taking an official position, but they were going to probably come to an official position soon and take it. They unfortunately had not yet come to any decision about subpoenaing the public records involved in order to show the process by which the city was spending huge amounts of police overtime and trying to get internal documents to see who really pressed this policy and how. In any case, I have numerous tapes on this subject. We can begin with a tape of Chris Worthington. He is the council member who is justifying this policy. And he makes a good political speech. He's running for office again in November, of course. And he does have a valid objective, trying to stop an anti-sitting law that's coming up on Tuesday. The problem, of course, is, as I've said, he is not speaking out as he should in a principled fashion against police misconduct. Instead, he's trying to say that he's covering his own ass, since he was the one who initiated this foolish idea of giving money to the police in the first place, not even through a public process. This was through a secret process, or let's say a closed process, by which the city manager, and as in Santa Cruz, where we have a suspect city manager, Dick Wilson, their suspect city manager, a man named Keene, fundamentally, he also was at this Police Review Commission meeting, gave a lot of double talk to the audience. We can hear some of that, and we'll also hear some of the speakers.
Councilmember Worthington.
Yeah, I'm going to try to keep my comments short so that we can actually give the public that came out in great numbers a chance to talk. And first, I guess I want to start that I believe there's a consensus in the community amongst every different interest group that I've talked to. There's a general consensus that in the past few weeks there were probably more police officers on Telegraph Avenue than there were needed. And that this opinion is not just shared by activists, but the business owners and the property owners on Telegraph agree that there isn't a need to have such a massive police presence. And I have asked the police, the city manager, because we deal with the city manager directly, to reduce the number of police to a more reasonable number. And my understanding is that he has agreed to do that because he's hearing from business owners, he's hearing from neighborhood people.
Interrupting this speech by Chris Worthington, notice that he's saying he's now moved to have the police numbers reduced, which he did, but only cut in half from the massive number of extra officers. There's still a considerable number more officers than before, although when I was up there yesterday, there were no officers on the avenue, interestingly enough. We're going to hear an interview or two also from folks on the avenue talking about what's been going on the avenue. It really is, I guess, not of so much interest to you out there here in Santa Cruz what the internal political intrigues are around this, although it may give us some pause as we look at our own political situation and the kind of intrigues that go on here with liberals, so-called liberals like Celia Scott and Catherine Byers, who nonetheless are complicit in kicking people off the boards of homeless agencies that would, you know, really give some tough oversight to deal with abuses against homeless people or power grabs by folks who have been in power for perhaps a little too long and have and are exercising their power unwisely. Worthington makes a good speech. We'll listen to a little more of him. The other thing that you should know when you're listening to some of the comments from the audience, we're going to kind of skip the long preliminary section at which Chief of Police Dash Butler and City Manager Keene are asked a bunch of questions by the Police Review Commission, good questions, and they essentially ignore them. They say, well, we're just doing our job, you know, if there are any complaints, they can come to you with them. We're enforcing the law. We have to do what we have to do. Requests to know what laws they're enforcing, what was the crisis that led to the need to suddenly put so much money into specifically Telegraph Avenue, whether other areas of the city are getting equal attention. None of these questions were answered. So the and also these two public officials left before the public comment period, so the public did not have an opportunity to confront these public officials, as they never do. As you know, in Santa Cruz, the opportunity for individuals to confront Chief Belcher are essentially nil, unless you're talking about at the business end of a boot, as Robert Flory found himself confronting Chief Belcher in 1995 when Belcher kicked him awake on Pacific Avenue in a peaceful protest. He was then only assistant chief, but he's graduated since then. Anyway, let's hear a little bit more of Chris Worthington of Berkeley talking about this Berkeley Telegraph Avenue crackdown and explaining how he is the hero of the hour. In fact, he's not the hero of the hour. He was one of the people who was made a mistake and helped to initiate this crackdown, and he takes no responsibility for that. That in itself is a dangerous sign that he is playing politics instead of being honest in the situation.
Activists and all kinds of people that this was overkill. And he's also agreed to remove the ORCA unit, which was here, and not to have such a massive presence. So to some extent, I think people have won a battle against such a massive presence. We also have to look at what is this really about? Because to some people, it's about the number of police on Telegraph Avenue. My understanding, and this is a political thing that the city manager can't say, but my understanding is this is part of a...